This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. More than 100 million people are in the path of Cyclone Fani as it slowly moves toward the eastern Indian state of Odisha. Indian authorities have evacuated more than 1.2 million people from the coastal low-lying areas and plan to move thousands more before the cyclone makes landfall early Friday. As of early Thursday, the storm was churning in the Bay of Bengal, with maximum sustained winds of 250 kilometers per hour and gusts of wind of up to 305 kilometers per hour. Fani has intensified significantly over the past couple of days. The U.S. Senate Thursday failed to override President Trump's veto of a bill demanding the U.S. stop supporting the Saudi coalition fighting in Yemen. The vote was 53-45 in favor, but it fell short of the two-thirds majority in the 100-member Senate to pass. Both the House and Senate passed the bill earlier this year despite Trump's promise to a veto. Venezuela's socialist president Nicolas Maduro clung to power Thursday, calling on the country's armed forces to oppose any coup plotter after opposition leader Juan Guaido failed to win defections from military leaders.
La lealtad.
Maduro told followers, loyalty is a value that either you have or you don't. In the case of this historical moment, loyalty is a collective value exercised as a nation, exercised as a people, and exercised as an institution as a collective value. After 2 days of massive street demonstrations against his government, the embattled Maduro said at a televised event with the military high command that, yes, we are in combat. Keep morale high in this fight to disarm any traitor, any coup plotter. This is VOA News. Acting U.S. Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan called for sweeping changes in the way the military handles sexual assaults and harassment as the Pentagon releases a new report showing the problem is, in fact, getting worse. The biennial report surveyed Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine personnel in 2018. Based on that survey, there were an estimated 20,500 instances of sexual assault, a 40% increase over the 14,900 estimate in the year 2016. Unwanted sexual contact ranges from groping to rape. Enlisted females between the ages of 17 to 24 years of age were at the highest risk of being assaulted, according to the survey. A White House meeting between the current U.S. president and another prominent businessman who was seeking to become president of Taiwan is causing some concern. The White House on Thursday sought to downplay any diplomatic or political sensitivity, saying that President Donald Trump and Foxconn founder Terry Goh did not discuss support for the billionaire's presidential campaign in Taiwan. The Taiwanese businessman, however, in a Facebook posting after Wednesday's meeting and in a discussion with reporters, said that he told the president of his candidacy, and Mr. Trump responded that being president was a tough job. He also displayed a pen and autographed coin, he said, that Mr. Trump gave him. Attorney General William Barr was again the center of Capitol Hill drama in the U.S. Thursday without even being there. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
A day after a tense Senate hearing, Barr did not show up for an appearance with the House Judiciary Committee after taking issue with the Democrat-led panel's plan to have its lawyers question him.
What we saw is fear.
Chairman Jerry Nadler called Barr afraid. Another Democrat put a toy chicken at Barr's empty seat. Republicans were not amused, with Ranking Member Doug Collins saying Barr would have testified if not for Democratic shenanigans.
The stunt and the circus continues over here.
Not long after, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi ramped up the tension, suggesting Barr had already lied to Congress last month, calling that a crime. Sagar Magani at the White House.
President Trump said Thursday conservative economic commentator Stephen Moore has withdrawn from consideration as a member of the Federal Reserve Board. Mr. Trump announced Moore's decision Thursday on Twitter after weeks of controversy about Moore's writings about women. Moore also drew criticism for failing to pay more than $300,000 in child support and alimony payments and for more than $75,000 tax dispute with the Internal Revenue Service. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 3rd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Jailed opposition leader, a member of parliament, Bobby Wine, has been granted bail, but with conditions.
The applicant is barred from engaging in unlawful demonstrations. In the event that this condition is breached, it shall lead to automatic lapse of his bail.
That's Magistrate Esther Nahilia. A Ugandan government official says journalists have a role in the fight against corruption. There was drama yesterday in Sierra Leone's parliament as opposition members walked out before President Biwott's speech. And Malawi's government denies it plans to arrest Vice President Solos Chilima before the May 21st general election.
I'm telling you that it's not true. I'm telling you so. I don't know sort of adjective I can tell you. It's not there. It's simply a lie. There's nothing of that sort.
Nicholas Dawusi is Malawi's Homeland Security Minister. Endemic corruption irritates voters ahead of South Africa's May 8th election. And a campaign is launched in Kenya to raise funds to educate refugee children. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda music star and opposition lawmaker Robert Chagulai, better known as Bobby Wine, is free on bail following his arrest earlier this week. The popular singer had been jailed for taking part in anti-government protests and will have to return to court to face those charges later this month. Halima Atumani has more from Kampala.
The popular singer and opposition lawmaker, popularly known as Bobby Wine, appeared in court Thursday through a video link from a maximum security prison. Roads leading to the Uganda Road Magistrates Court were heavily guarded by both the military and police personnel. Inside the packed courtroom, there were 10 lawyers representing Wine in a session that lasted close to 5 hours. The opposition politician faces charges of unlawfully taking part in a protest against the mobile money and social media tax in 2018. The government says the protests violated some sections of the Public Order Management Act 2013. Before making her decision, the magistrate agreed to Wine's request to address the court through a video link from prison.
And Your Honor, if standing for what is right, if standing for truth is going to earn me my freedom, I will thank God for it. But Your Honor, if standing for what is right is going to keep me in this prison, then I will thank God even louder. After all, I have a lot of work to do even here in prison.
The state prosecutor urged the court to deny Wine's bail for security reasons and argued the politician doesn't have a constitutional right to bail. After adjourning for an hour, Magistrate Esther Nahilia granted Wine's request to be released on bail, but with key conditions.
The applicant is barred from engaging in unlawful demonstrations. In the event that this condition is breached, it shall lead to automatic lapse of his bail.
After the decision, the court broke out singing one of Wine's songs, which describes how, when the struggle is over, people will wear shining crowns. President Yoweri Museveni has accused social media of spreading what he says is gossip and fake news. A former close confidant to the Ugandan president, Miriam Matembe, explains why she chose to stand surety for Wine.
I have seen Honorable Chagulani being tortured, being brutalized, all for standing out for truth. Our president loves power so much, as a matter of life and death. Therefore, when he sees anybody whom he thinks can shake his position as a president, he gets scared.
Wine's lawyer cautioned his release may be temporary.
Many bizarre things are happening in this country. There's total abuse, there's total impunity, breakdown of rule of law in the country. So we will not be surprised if he's rearrested. Of course, the issue is who determines the unlawfulness of a demonstration. If it is this police of ours, then Bobby Wine will never be free in this country.
Wine returns to court on May 23rd. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
A Ugandan government official says journalists have a role in the fight against corruption. Irene Muliagunya, the inspector general of government, says her office will work with journalists in that respect. She spoke Thursday ahead of World Press Freedom Day today, May 3rd. As Mogumi Davis Rakerinj reports from Kampala, Ugandan journalists say they face oppression in doing their work.
Last week, Carlton Scovia Nakamia, an investigative journalist with the local television, BBS Telefaina, embarked on doing an investigative story about girls trafficking. She says both herself and a producer were caught by people she describes as very powerful people in the government to back down. Nakamia says although she was determined to continue with her investigation, her seniors reminded her that there's no story worth her life.
When I was investigating the person behind that trafficking, because he has trafficked so many girls, I was threatened, reported to my bosses, and all they could say, just drop the story. It's not worth your life. I came to understand that the person is very well connected in the system. He's a good supporter of the government. He's untouchable, in brief.
Besides media restrictions, Nakamia says female reporters are usually underlooked by both their colleagues and their sources. Stephen Mayombwe, another journalist in Kampala, agrees.
If you talk about rights of journalists in Uganda, they are more in the book than actually they are realized. Just like you hear some people say we have freedom before speech, but then it is the other way after speaking. Because now, as we are talking right now, there are various papers that are being distributed from UCC to various media houses, telling them to relieve some of our editors, some of journalists of their positions because of publishing what they saw. This was not made up content.
This week, Uganda Communications Commission, or UCC, which regulates media in Uganda, issued a directive to various media houses, including Nakamia's BBS, NBS TV, NTV, Top Radio, and others, to suspend some of their staff for what they said was broadcast of information that, in two quotes, misrepresents information, views, facts and events in a manner likely to mislead or cause alarm to the public, end of quote. The directive was issued after various media houses broadcast reports of the arrest and detention of popular politician and artist Robert Chagrani, commonly known by his stage name Bobby Wine. While addressing journalists this Thursday, Eileen Mriagonja, who heads the anti-corruption body, the Inspectorate General of Government, said journalists too play a role in national building. She says through their reports, journalists can expose corrupt officials.
We know that you as the press also carry out investigative journalism. Whenever you carry out your investigations as the press, please share copies of your findings with us. Whenever you find things that are not right in institutions, please share them with us. We at the Inspectorate of Government are willing to work with you as the press.
Mriagonja cautioned journalists to report accurately and objectively. For VOA News, I am Ogume, Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Malawi's ruling Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, has denied media reports that the government plans to arrest Vice President Saulos Chilima on trumped-up charges before the May 21st general election. The denial followed local media reports in which the vice president allegedly admitted helping the DPP to rig the 2014 elections. The vice president is also alleged to have said that Minister for Homeland Security, Nicholas Dawusi, played a key role in rigging the elections. The vice president is one of about seven candidates challenging incumbent President Arthur Peter Mutharika in the upcoming election. Homeland Security Minister Nicholas Dawusi, who is also the spokesperson for the ruling DPP, says the allegations are false.
That's laughable. We cannot and have no plans whatsoever to arrest Chilima. You know what? Chilima, for what reason? No, it's so true.
Analysts are saying that Vice President Dr. Saulos Chilima poses an existential threat politically to the re-election effort of incumbent President Peter Atta Mutharika.
I'm telling you that he's not a political threat. We cannot and we shall never create another political saint or somebody to profile him because those that are saying so maybe not only an exceptional political naivete, but it's to a political grandstanding, that is Dr. Chilima, be something else. But I wish if you were in Malawi, so that you made conclusions by yourself. As if there is nothing of that sort.
Well, some are suggesting Salos Chilima has been exposing the ills in the government, which they said has made incumbent President Mutharika unpopular. So he stands a chance of losing the election.
I'm telling you that it's not there. It's not true. I'm telling you so. I don't know sort of adjective I can tell you. It's not there. It's simply a lie. There's nothing of that sort.
So realistically, what are the chances of President Mutharika of winning re-election on May 21?
99%. I'm saying 99% chances because Professor Peter Mutharika has developed Malawi, and the development projects that are seen are so classical that each and every Malawian appreciates.
What about the issue of fighting corruption? Because President Mutharika promised Malawians he will weed out corruption, there will not be any corruption, but his vice president is citing him for unwillingness and lacking the political will to fight corruption.
We are fighting and we will fight corruption. And I can assure you that government has done all what it takes to make sure that taxpayers' money go to its intended purpose.
Nicholas Dawsey is Malawi's Homeland Security Minister. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clote from the capital, Lilongwe. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 3rd. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. There was drama yesterday in Sierra Leone's parliament as members of the opposition All People's Congress Party, the APC, walked out as President Julius Mada Bio was to address the opening of parliament. The APC members, dressed in their red beret, took to the streets of Freetown to protest what they call the government's abuse of power. Since losing the 2018 elections, critics say the APC has been trying to undermine the new government. For example, the APC has called for the replacement of the Electoral Commission chair, whom they blame for their defeat. Ibrahim Sori Koroma is former Secretary General of the Sierra Leone Bar Association. He says the walkout was a combination of opposition frustration over how they feel the government has been treating them.
The opposition members of parliament claimed that the ruling government imposed a speaker, even though the ruling government had a minority in parliament, which to this day has been very frustrating to members of parliament. Added to that, the majority party in parliament is the main opposition, All People's Congress, and they are of the view that the cases brought against their members of parliament was deliberate by the ruling party to reduce their numbers in parliament. The opposition party has actually also brought cases against members of the ruling party in parliament, but those cases have never been mentioned. So I think they were looking for an opportunity to register those frustrations to the president, and it turned out that it was a bit of an embarrassment, both for the president, but also for the occasion itself.
People say since the election last year that the opposition APC is whining, that it does not want to accept the results of the election.
As per law, yes, the members of parliament can register or protest in any manner that they deem fit in those circumstances. And what they did today was within the law and within their rights to walk out. This is not the first time it has happened. When the ruling party was in opposition, they did that to the former president so many times. I think that what people are talking about is the attitude of the new government towards not only the opposition parties, but towards the population. Things are going wrong economically, and nothing is being done about that.
I've spoken many times, particularly with the chairman of the Anti-Corruption Commission, and it seems to me that the commission is doing a very good job in going after officials of the former ruling party, the APC, when it comes to corruption.
I understand from the point of view of the Anti-Corruption Commission that they are doing a fantastic job. I agree with you on that. But in my view, there is only one person who has been in government that has been prosecuted for corruption. That's the former deputy minister. There is no other person, as far as I am aware, that have been prosecuted who is a member of APC and a politician that has been investigated and prosecuted.
Ibrahim Sori Koroma is a former Secretary General of the Sierra Leone Bar Association. He spoke with me from the U.S. state of California. Corruption is at the heart of many of the complaints that South Africans have about their government ahead of the May 8th general election. The ruling African National Congress has been embroiled in numerous scandals, a fact that the opposition parties have used as ammunition. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
For many South African voters, the government's long struggle with corruption, is not about the staggering scope of the problem. A minister in the ruling African National Congress estimated that corruption could be costing the economy nearly $2 billion every year. For student Matabu Mokopane, all it took to turn her off the ANC was a tiny road in her rural town.
There was a contract that came to do a paving, and then the councillor's friends got the tender. And actually, their papers were expired, but still they got a tender, while there were people who were supposed to get a tender.
South Africans are universally furious, says Ronald Chauke of the organization Undoing Tax Abuse, a South African watchdog.
I'm very, very angry and disturbed by this. Most of our young people who are economically active and were supposed to be constructively contributing to the economy are left jobless. They are basically without hope. So this corruption on its own, to be honest with you, it has ruined the lives of many people.
Surprisingly, says analyst Ivor Sarakinski, the issue has not put the ANC on the back foot. That is because, he says, the ruling party still plays better politics than their competitors, even when it comes to thorny issues.
It should be a much higher issue in the campaign trail. And we're not seeing any of the parties play this corruption card. It's something that the ANC is very vulnerable to. So when the opposition have tried to use the corruption issue to campaign, they've done it ham-handedly and it's backfired.
Chauke agrees and notes the opposition parties also have their own skeletons, which leaves voters in a predicament.
Most electorate asking the question, who is the suitable and appropriate alternative to the ANC? But it seems we don't have a proper alternative who can take that baton and take the country forward. So we are basically in an unfortunate situation, which we prefer that somehow, somewhere, maybe President Cyril Ramaphosa, if he's given a chance, he can try to do a better job.
It is a depressing coda to the otherwise uplifting tale of the Rainbow Nation, where 25 years ago, millions of jubilant South Africans lined up to vote for the first time. This year, Mokopane says she and her friends have come up with a solution. This group of 20-somethings, all members of the so-called Born Free generation, say they are not going to vote at all. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thousands of refugee youths in Kenya do not attend school because of lack of funding. This, according to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, UNHCR, and the Supreme Council of Kenyan Muslims. The two groups are working together for the first time to raise funds to educate refugees. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the group hopes to launch the campaign during the month of Ramadan.
Kenya is host to more than 450,000 refugees, 77% of whom are women and children. Speaking in Nairobi, Kenya, Fadia Abdalla, UNHCR representative in Kenya, said that majority of refugee children living in Kenya's Dadaab and Kakuma refugee camps only have access to primary education. Abdalla says less than one-third of refugee school-age children are able to attend secondary school and only 13% of refugee youth have access to tertiary education.
Partnership between UNHCR and SUPCAM is a new partnership around education, using the month of Ramadan, the month of the faith, as an spirit, an introductory or an entry to raise funds for education. UNHCR aim is to enable all children and youth to access education, and the same thing for the Supreme Council of Muslims in Kenya.
A funding gap for UNHCR's education programs has resulted in the lack of basic infrastructure and a shortage of teaching personnel essential to provide quality education to refugee children and youths in Kenya. The UNHCR Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa, Ambassador Mohamed Abdi Afei, said that by joining efforts with SUPCAM in this holy month of Ramadan, they are hopeful that they can draw attention and support to the growing crisis of uneducated refugees.
Education being the greatest equalizer in our society, we want to undertake this campaign this year because we think as UNHCR, it has reached a crisis point which merits attention and support. And we hope that this month, in partnership with the Kenyans, we can be able to raise resources that can be able to lift at least some out of limbo to uneducate them and help give them hope in life so they don't go migrating, you know, to Libya or those other places in jails and become a global problem.
Supporting the initiative, Yusuf Nzibo, the chairman of Supreme Council of Kenya Muslims, said that many refugees in Kenya have lived in forced displacements for over 20 years, and that with the campaign, the agencies can help improve some of their suffering.
We Kenyans are known to be very humanitarian, very welcoming, but there's an issue of refugees in this country that many of us have not paid attention to. About half of the youth in these camps do not have an opportunity to have an education. These young people, once educated, they are the blocks that will build the future of their country.
UNHCR and SUPKEM will be hosting an iftar fundraising dinner for leaders from the Muslim community, business community, government representatives, and members of diplomatic corps. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jumbo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with reactions coming from South Africans after the Court of Arbitration for Sport dismissed an appeal by the Olympic 800 meters champion Caster Semenya against the introduction of regulations to restrict testosterone levels in female athletes. South Africa's golden girl was fighting against rules by the International Association of Athletics Federations to decrease naturally high testosterone levels in female track athletes. While some are saying that the ruling against Caster Semenya is unfair, others believe she needs to be left alone so that she can continue to participate in races peacefully and win like she always does.
Well, I think we were all very disappointed when we got the verdict from the Court of Arbitration for Sport. We were hoping for something a bit more positive.
She has always been who she is, and they need to leave her alone so she can continue running in peace. She is what she is. There is no reason why she should be viewed wrongly for who she is. She's a girl, that's it.
In table tennis news, Nigeria's Aron Akwodiri has maintained his dominance as the continent's best as well as overall 23rd rated player in the world. In the latest ranking released by the World Table Tennis ruling body, Aron Akwodiri gained some points to maintain his ranking. The table tennis star says the future is even brighter for younger players on the continent.
So I think they have gained a lot, and for sure in future, if Nigeria can continue to encourage them by attending more tournaments, I think they will be able to participate very well against the best players in the world.
In football news, ahead of the 2019 African Cup of Nations, Bafana Bafana of South African national football team coach Stuart Baxter has revealed that a reserve national team will represent the nation at the upcoming regional COSAFA Cup in Durban later this month. Many expected Stuart Baxter to select a full-strength squad for the COSAFA Cup tournament and use it as preparations for the African Cup of Nations in Egypt that starts next month. But Coach Baxter says he needs a fully rested team at the AFCON tournament after a long and tasking season.
The players are coming off a very long season, and they will come off. They're coming off their seasons staggered. We want to remain competitive and be as well prepared as possible. So we could throw in a very strong team in COSAFA and win that, but then those same players have got to stay at tournament mode for another 6 weeks.
And finally, fans wearing yellow colours will be allowed free entry into the Lucas Moripe Stadium as Mamelodi Sundowns prepare for their CAF Champions League second leg semi-final against Wydad Casablanca on Saturday. The South Africans take on the Moroccan Giants, trailing 2-1 from the first leg that was played in Rabat last weekend. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, May 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Thank you.